Welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast, and I'm Kojo Benton Williams. The VA Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. Today's episode is a special program dubbed Tour of African Gastronomy Talk Series, where featured chefs of UNWTO's Tour of African Gastronomy Journal speak to us on their culinary journeys. My guest today is Chef Nicole Ansoni, executive chef and owner of Inca Steakhouse, the only steakhouse in Rwanda. She takes us on a tour of Rwanda's diverse and unique gastronomy offering. Welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast, and this morning I've been joined by Chef Nicole Ansoni. She's an executive chef at Inca Steakhouse, if I'm right. I think she's going to introduce herself, but again, it's part of the series we're running on a Tour of African Gastronomy Talk Series. And the Tour of the African Gastronomy Series is an initiative and a publication by the World Tourism Organization with over 38 African chefs, and the food of African, in the African region. So this morning I'm speaking to Chef, like I said, Nicole Ansoni. Nicole, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Kojo. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you to Voyage Afrique also for featuring me.
Perfect. How are things in Rwanda? Are you in Kigali or you are in my favorite place? For where the arts and crafts is, I just lost sight of the name now. But where are you? Are you in Kigali?
Yes. I'm in Kigali. Things are a bit sort of coming back to normalcy. We went into a second lockdown about 2 weeks ago. We sort of slowly getting back into the work life. Our, unfortunately for us restaurants, our working hours are kind of short right now. So it's proved quite difficult. Same for the entire tourism sector, actually. That includes all hospitality enterprises, and you can imagine tour operators, so on. So the ricochet effect is that, you know, all of us are just trying to keep our head above water.
Exactly. All right, let's get started. Now, introduce yourself. I mean, if you want to introduce yourself a bit to my audience.
Yes, so my name is Nicole Ansoni. I am a Rwandan chef and a restaurateur. I have been in the food sector for some 15 years in different capacities. I am on the board of the Hospitality Association here in Rwanda. So, hospitality is really my passion. I'm just fortunate to be able to do what I love every day.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that. Now, how did you get into gastronomy, culinary gastronomy? How did you get into this business?
Oh, well, you know, for me, I always say it's like being a priest, it's a vocation. And then you have to figure out how to put your foot in the door. For me, I knew very early on that this is what I wanted to do. And then you have to give yourself the tools. So, which is to work your way up in every kitchen, to learn along the way, you know, coming from an African background, of course, my parents were not keen on the idea of me being a chef or having my own restaurant. They thought it was beneath the family pedigree to aspire to want to be a cook,
an engineer.
And so, you know, you follow the African tradition, which is, you know, I did all of my formal, you know, my bachelor's, my master's. But as I was doing my studies in the US, it was very imperative for me to understand the restaurant world. And so what it took to run a restaurant, to run a kitchen, to run the front of the house. And so I did almost every job you can imagine. So sort of paying my dues along the way. And then when I amassed sort of the capital to be able to open my own restaurant, I did just that. And, you know, all of these experiences along the way, that's why it's so important in our business to pay your dues. Because that is the, I mean, some people go the traditional route, which is to go to culinary school, which is also fine. But even when you do that, you still have to pay your dues in kitchens, you know, before you can sort of understand what it takes to run that kind of a business.
Okay, Gnada. And obviously, as you know, African food, African gastronomy is not out there like other regions of the world. How did you, the transition from, for example, in the States, okay, and wanting to do to engage in business as into food or gastronomy, how did you find the opportunity in working in the African gastronomy space?
I think there are two things. There are two parts to your question, because there's one, yes, there isn't enough exposure to what is African gastronomy. And also the question is very elusive. What is African gastronomy, right? People are familiar with Ghanaian food, Nigerian food, Senegalese food. So there are certain Ethiopian food. So there are certain African foods that have sort of become world known, and then others that are obscure and sort of elusive. Now, in terms of finding your place, I think any chef will tell you that it's very important to acquire the technique. So all of us will learn French technique and, you know, sort of all of the basics that enable you to now take what is your mother food, you know, the food that you grew up eating and the ingredients that you know that are local to you and your region or your continent, and then sort of enhance them with technique and try to find new twists and how to present them. Because for me, it was very important, you know, not to, I think sometimes people, you know, can make African food gimmicky, you know, sort of like, you know, rice and beans kind of just as if our food cannot be refined and cannot be elevated, and as if our food is not intricate. Actually, similar to Asian foods, we use so many spices that it is very technical. So as simple as it seems, our food is very, very technical. So yes, so the joy of being an African chef really is what I, you know, for me, it's to present my local ingredients in a continental way. So in a way that is not only approachable, but that makes you sort of look at African food not as a gimmick.
Okay. Now, in terms of obviously the ingredients and the spices, etc., what did you discover? Because from a macro level, that's fine. But now that you're going to the business, sometimes some of our our culinary are not even in the cities or are not exposed within the African culture or within the country. How then were you able to bring that up or make it part of what you want to offer to the world and to your country?
Well, I think what you have to do is, in our business, you have to create an ecosystem, right? So in Rwanda, hospitality is very nascent. You know, as you know, we've had our issues in the past. We have really had amazing leadership and helped us rebuild our country to get to a place where now we are one of the first tourism destinations in Africa and people want to come and see us. And in doing that, so we have more people that are entering into the sector, more capacity building that's happening. So we have to create skills. And so the first thing you have to do is, yes, you have to source your farmers, right? You meet with farmers and then they're farming certain ingredients, but maybe they're not farming it at the higher level in the way that you wish that they would farm it. So you have to now train them and teach them and sort of, yourself, you're also learning as you're going into the process. I'm not a farmer. I don't raise cattle. But in the process of trying to achieve my goal, I had to go into that, as all of us actually in a lot of African countries have to, which is you have to go into the training and doing the capacity building and doing the sourcing yourself, growing some of the ingredients yourself. So you create exactly this, creating an ecosystem, which is not very easy, but it's very, very rewarding because you see now the sector growing. And when, you know, foreigners are coming in, they could not even imagine that actually there's all this back-end work that is being done. And you see also farmers being empowered, and it's a sort of, it's a supply-demand thing. So the more they elevate their farming techniques and their raising of cattle, so on and so forth, they also see the added value financially for them. So it's been, as because a lot of hotels before were ordering from Kenya, maybe ordering from South Africa, ordering from Europe. And because, and this is even fresh produce, but because now they're seeing that Rwandan farmers are rising to the occasion and they're improving their techniques, and they are actually a lot of old ingredients that were being farmed in Rwanda, you know, many, many years ago, but sort of, you know, with globalization, cultures stopped eating certain things, you know, start adapting to neighboring countries' food, so on and so forth. And so what happens is some old ingredients get lost, and now you're seeing them resurge, and you're seeing this wave of new Rwandan chefs who really want to explore their culinary history.
Okay, excellent. Now, you mentioned the hotels. Have we seen a lot of Rwandan cuisines infused in the, you know, intercontinental offerings that sometimes we may want like to call it, in our hotels and the five star and all of that? From where you sit as a executive chef, if you have engagement with some of the suppliers and some of your peers, do you see change?
Yes, you're seeing definitely a change because, you know, it's a supply and demand. So the tourist that is coming to Rwanda also wants some sort of a feel of authenticity. So, of course, now with your big hotels like Marriott, Serena, Radisson, you're not really seeing that. You're seeing maybe inclusions of certain ingredients, but not really. However, you have an insurgence now of a lot of luxury boutique hotels. And these are really trying to offer more of a local feel. So they are definitely doing a lot of fusion cuisine and trying to be very creative with showcasing the best of the local ingredients. So yes, definitely, I think we are moving in the right direction.
Now, with your experience, what do you think can be done to even promote it further, or, you know, other avenues that, you know, we can be able to get people patronizing a lot of our, even ourselves as Africans and as people from Rwanda, will be able to appreciate what we have?
I think first thing for us to, I think one, you there has to be more offerings of it, right? So if there are more offerings of it at different price points, because if it's, you have to also be realistic and say, look, we are a poor country. So if we want our own people to try this fusion food or elevated gastronomic African food that we are creating, it needs to be affordable. So, but in order for it to be affordable, there also needs to be more players in the game. So that means that we need to have more chefs, create a greater industry of chefs. And so I'm really passionate about that, you know, capacity building and paying it forward. But in order for that to happen, you need to, you know, before you can play infusion and double infusion, you need to acquire skills. And so now we have a lot of more hospitality schools that are being created. Unfortunately, we don't have yet real culinary institutes that have the training facilities for to create chefs. But I know the government is working on that. And that's, I think, the way forward. That's the part one of answering your question. The second is, for sure, I feel like once we will have more chefs that are able to create and create, you know, at different price points, then you'll have more consumers locally. So it doesn't become this fancy African food that we're making only for tourists and well-to-do people. And I think in that way it will spread. If more of us are doing it, it will catch on.
Super. In the book, you know, in the tour of African gastronomy, and which you would obviously you contributed in the production, you gave us a recipe of granite and lemongrass poached Kivu tilapia. Okay. Now, yes. If I'm cooking you, yes, to give me three foods that one cannot miss when he or she is in Rwanda, take me a tour of that.
So, technically, when you come to Rwanda, we farm beans. We are farmers of beans and corn and banana. So
potatoes. I love the potatoes.
And potatoes, which are just phenomenal, right? You know, once you eat a Rwandan potato, you can't eat another potato. It's become very difficult for me to eat potatoes elsewhere. I promise you, potatoes, bananas, and avocados. It's become a struggle. But really what is native to Rwanda is banana beans, because even before potatoes, banana beans and, I'm drawing a blank, banana beans and, I just said it, I'm drawing a blank.
There's banana beans, I think there's potatoes, there's, few of them. When I was in Busanzi, I got to interact with a few people and, yeah. I got some knowledge about that in Kivu and all the tilapia and all the fish, etc.
Yeah, so of course, you know, you have to understand that most people are subsistence farmers. Oh, I mean, it was corn. So traditionally, and of course, we have like flowers like sorghum and things like that, but and cassava, you know, so it's a lot of starchy vegetables. However, if you live on the coast, so if you live by the lake, you are eating fish. These are people who grew up eating fish regularly, and you'll find that those who are, you know, in different provinces, like Musanze, didn't grow up eating fish, but they eat more potatoes and beans and things like that. So of course, in trying to, as you see, as it evolves, right, as Rwandan cuisine evolves, people now are eating more fish. You know, we're eating more fish. You know, traditionally, Rwandans are actually vegetarian. Their diet is one, because of affordability, and two, because for a long time, Rwandans did not eat cattle. They raised cattle, they didn't eat cattle. So, we're seeing a shift in people now eating more meat, people eating fish, people, but you see the groundnut is very local. So in creating that dish for me, it was about sort of bringing forward the groundnut, which is a very important staple in our diet, and a salute also to a region of our country which farms tilapia, which naturally has it also in the lake, and is widely consumed and loved in that region.
Okay, I enjoyed the ibirai. I think so. I don't know if I'm getting the name right, but yeah, it was quite you know, delicious meal.
Love now, to hear that meal was very memorable.
there we go. Now, as we wrap up our conversation, what is Steakhouse, Inca Steakhouse, doing again, you know, from your own side to continue to let people appreciate random food and even food culture, fine dining, if you call it, in our own way?
So Inca Steakhouse, it was very important to me. The name Inca means cow in Kinyarwanda. And actually, when I opened the restaurant, it was very controversial. It was a very big debate even within my family. So why would I call it Inca? Because Inca, technically the cow is sacred in our culture, like I was explaining earlier. So we drink the milk, but we don't eat the cow. However, we do eat beef, but the name cow is sort of a sacred name. However, when I was creating the restaurant, it was important for me to look at it from a global perspective and say, okay, should I export the restaurant to any other country? I want people to know that this is a Rwandan restaurant, and so we do not we use local ingredients. So I am a steakhouse, the only steakhouse in Rwanda. It was very important for me to specialize in Rwandan beef and show the quality of Rwandan beef, And so that is how we embarked into on that enterprise. So really what we've done, we've been able to do in the last four and a half years is really one, I think, introduce people to different cuts of beef. Whereas before, people were very unfamiliar with cuts of beef. Literally, you could only get a tenderloin and everything else, which is called carbonade, which is basically throw everything else in a grinder and, you know, and now people are understanding the importance of cuts and the particularities of it, the temperature, understanding temperatures of meat, understanding different food combinations, because for me it was about, again, sourcing locally, but presenting it to you in a continental way. And, you know, I feel very proud of my team. There's still a long way to go, but I think we've really been able to change the landscape in terms of food in Rwanda. I'm very happy to say that I am the only Rwandan female-owned high-end restaurant of that, you know, so I'm very proud of that. However, there needs to be more of us. There needs to be more of us that take a seat at the table. And it's coming. You know, there are more. There are more female restaurateurs breaking into the sector. And so, you know, it's important that we give them a seat at the table.
Okay. Now, maybe my final question is, do you think that we can take advantage of technology to push this agenda in terms of African gastronomy?
Look, I think people now, you know, people, especially with social media, right? I think people are always on their phones. People are always looking for visuals. And I think we've become a very much visual culture globally. So yes, I think that the simple fact of just posting and reposting, right? People sharing, oh, I went to this place and I ate this. And, you know, I think, yes, technology definitely helps in terms of marketing anything. So I don't see why it would be any different with African gastronomy. So I think that we need to be more conscious about it and really promote it and sell it and encourage people to create businesses around it.
Okay. In 1 minute, tell the world why people should come to Rwanda and at the same time come in there. Enjoy your food.
Please come to Rwanda. We're a little country that could. We are a beautiful, really beautiful country, beautiful landscape, beautiful people, perfect weather. It's never too hot, never too cold. Very clean, the cleanest country in Africa. Full of generous people, hardworking people, resilient people. There are beautiful lodges now that have opened in different regions of the country. You can come gorilla sightseeing and enjoy the views of our volcanoes, the rainforest. We also have some savanna. We have a game park, and come and enjoy our wonderful potatoes. As Kojo has said, the best potatoes in the world. Best bananas, best avocados in the world. And please, when you are in town, come to Inha Steakhouse. Ask for me. I'll be very happy to meet. We really support our local farmers. We have the best steaks in the entire country, the best meat. So I look forward to seeing you on your next trip to Rwanda.
Chef Nicole Ansoni, thank you so much for your time. And it's been fascinating taking us on a brief tour of what we should expect once we are in Rwanda.
Thank you so much, Kojo. Thank you so much to Voyage Afrique. And I look forward to seeing you in Rwanda very soon.